This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. We present Jill Bevilacqua's program, There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye. Let's listen.
Jesus, upon entering Jericho, passed through the city. There was a man there named Zacchaeus, the chief tax collector and a wealthy man. He was trying to see what Jesus was like, but being small of stature, was unable to do so because of the crowd. He first ran on in front, then climbed a sycamore tree, which was along Jesus' route, in order to see him. When Jesus came to the spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, hurry down. I mean to stay at your house today." He quickly descended and welcomed him with delight. When this was observed, everyone began to murmur, "He has gone to a sinner's house as a guest." Zacchaeus stood his ground and said to the Lord, "I give half my belongings, Lord, to the poor. If I have defrauded anyone in the least, I pay him back fourfold." Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house, for this is what it means to be a son of Abraham. The Son of Man has come to search out and save what was lost."
In his journey to Jerusalem, Jesus has been taking the route which all Galileans took when going on pilgrimage to the Holy City, travelling directly south on the road which follows the course of the River Jordan. He's come now to a town on the western side, set back from the river, about 10 kilometres north of the Dead Sea and 20 to the northeast of Jerusalem. Jericho today is a town of some 13,000 inhabitants. But here once stood what has been described as the Pearl of the South Jordan Valley, the city of Jericho, one of the oldest cities on earth, possibly the oldest. For recent excavations have dated it to some time between 5,000 and 6,000 years before Christ. Situated in the Rift or Jordan Valley, Jericho is an oasis about 280 metres below sea level. In summer it bakes in intense heat, but it is, we're told, an ideal winter resort. The Jericho of our Lord's time was neither the original city, which the archaeologists have discovered, nor the town that exists today. Ancient Jericho was thought to have been destroyed by Joshua and his men, who blew their trumpets, and the walls came tumbling down.
Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and Jericho, and Jericho. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down.
But modern biblical scholars, in the light of the excavations, do not take the destruction of ancient Jericho as applying to the time of Joshua, if indeed he even existed. Jericho was certainly destroyed more than once. After the Babylonian devastation, the Jews rebuilt it on their return from exile, and Herod the Great made it his winter quarters, building a racecourse, an amphitheatre, and cleverly irrigated gardens. This was Jericho in the time of our Lord. And while we're on the subject of gardens, it's perhaps surprising to find that Jericho is famous for its roses. There are whole fields of them. But don't be surprised if someone tells you that the rose of Jericho is not a rose at all. It isn't. Sometimes known as the resurrection plant, it's a small evergreen with very dense branches which grows in the sandy deserts of Arabia, Egypt and Syria. But its strange characteristic is that when the plant dies in the dry season, the branches curl inwards to form a tight ball. When exposed to moisture, it becomes green again and the branches unfold once more. In some places, it was believed that to bring the plant close to a woman in labour would make for an easy birth. And so we come to the happening of today's gospel, the unexpected conversion of the little rich man, a man with a big purse and a small body. Zacchaeus was not only a tax collector, he was, the gospel tells us, the chief tax collector and a wealthy man. For Jericho was a thriving city, the second in importance in Palestine. It must have been an attractive city too, being an oasis, with its palms and Herod's gardens, a green city in fact. The streets were almost certainly tree-lined, for we're told there was a sycamore tree along our Lord's route.
Silence before sound. Sycamore, a tree predestined to beauty. Blown leaves, antiquity. Light lost, light found. Light on the leaves in wind flying. The silver-sequined goat leaf dark-skinned. Sycamore leaves, coiled thick, the sap made quick. A sign to us, a tree, and then a tree no more. Silent Zacchaeus, ageless one, the buried sun and the key it bore. Light found in every age, the leaves of spring fading from lineage, the seed, the wing.
We meet the sycamore quite often in the Gospels, so it must have been fairly common. It belongs to the maple genus of trees and shrubs, which are often grown for their foliage, which colours brilliantly in autumn. But when Jesus was passing through Jericho, it was springtime, and so the sycamore would have been in full leaf with long, trailing yellow flowers. It's a fast-growing, spreading tree, reaching often to 100 feet, and with a spread of 50. And as we read in the Encyclopedia of Plants and Flowers, it makes a fine specimen tree and is good for an exposed position. Quite a tree. And perfect, then, for our man desperately wanting to catch a glimpse of this Jesus he's heard so much about. But, oh dear, he can see nothing but people's heads and shoulders, the crowd's so great and he's so small. After pushing his way to the front, however, Zacchaeus spots a great sycamore at the side of the road, and without a second's hesitation shins up it, to the amazement of those standing by. It was not every day that the most important money man in town went tree-climbing, but then it was not every day that the carpenter from Nazareth came to town.
Zacchaeus climbing, mounted above his youth, alone in time, seeking the heavenly death. The crooked he had left, yes, and the wise, to climb the tree trunk, to sit in a cleft, and see through his eyes not what they saw, not what they heard, no leaf, no claw, no wing, no bird, but light surpassing all known green, as if all drunk and sober stirred known, unknown, where seen, unseen, were one alone, Jesus passing, the Nazarene. And Zacchaeus gripped fast the tree branch, crouching, if his eyes see us, if his eyes see us.
Was Zacchaeus hoping also that Jesus might see him? This seems to be poet Vernon Watkins' feeling in his poem Zacchaeus in the Leaves. Robert Frost, on the other hand, comments simply,
Zacchaeus, he did climb the tree, our Lord to see.
And see him he did. But then the most surprising thing happened. Jesus looked up and called Zacchaeus by name. Hurry down, Zacchaeus, I mean to stay at your house today. And Zacchaeus, who was nothing if not agile, was down in a flash. And, the evangelist writes, welcomed him with delight. Far from delighted, on the other hand, were the onlookers, who immediately began to murmur. Now, if you look up the word murmur in a dictionary, you find the definition a low, continuous background noise, and the quiet or subdued expression of a feeling. For the word murmuring, however, as well as a low, continuous sound, we also have a subdued or private expression of discontent. And in fact, in the Jerusalem Bible, we read, they all complained when they saw what was happening. Not that the murmur or complaint seems to have been very private. When I read the word murmur in today's Gospel, however, it had nothing to do with complaining, though quite a lot to do with a low, continuous background noise. It was the sound of insects. In Keats, the murmurous haunt of flies on summer eves. And in Tennyson, and murmuring of innumerable bees. Shelley, too, writes of sleep, murmuring like a noontide bee. And Matthew Arnold talks of the live murmur of a summer's day. But our murmuring crowd in Jericho must have sounded more like a swarm, not of drowsy, humming bees, but of angry hornets, or at the very least, like a murmuration of starlings. The scene brings to mind the far more threatening one during our Lord's trial, when Pilate shows him to the crowd, saying simply, "Behold the man," and they shout, "Crucify him." This was no murmur, but a vicious shriek. But when we used to put on our passion play at school and this scene had to be enacted, we were not allowed to use the real words for fear of being blasphemous. Instead, the crowd on stage had to say, "Rhubarb cinnamon," starting with a low murmur and gradually increasing in volume. I don't know who invented the combination of words, but it was incredibly effective. And now for some light relief, here's a verse about murmurings from 17th century poet Abraham Cowley.
"Well then, I now do plainly see this busy world, and I shall ne'er agree. The very honey of all earthly joy does of all meats the soonest cloy, and they, methinks, deserve my pity, who for it can endure the stings, the crowd and buzz and murmurings of this great hive, the city."
Certainly, the crowd following Jesus in Jericho must have had a shock when they saw him stop and speak to the little man up in the tree. And when they heard him say he was going to the house of this sinner, they were scandalized. The name Zacchaeus meant pure, but it was surely the last epithet anyone would have applied to a tax collector, a breed known universally for their propensity for lining their pockets. But in the same way that Jesus commented on his calling of Matthew that he had not come to call the just but sinners, when Zacchaeus declared that he would give half his belongings to the poor and would pay back fourfold anyone he had defrauded, our Lord again explained his mission, saying that he had come to search out and save what was lost. And remembering the many occasions on which Jesus just does that, searches out the sinner and is criticized for doing so, let's listen to a story about Abba Moses, one of the Desert Fathers, quoted by Henri Nouwen in his book The Way of the Heart.
"A brother committed a fault. A council was called to which Abba Moses was invited, but he refused to go to it. Then the priest sent someone to say to him, 'Come, for everyone is waiting for you.' So he got up and went. He took a leaking jug, filled it with water, and carried it with him. The others came out to meet him and said to him, 'What is this, Father?' The old man said to them, 'My sins run out behind me, and I do not see them. And today I'm coming to judge the error of another.' When they heard that, they said no more to the brother, but forgave him."
One of the most striking details of Luke's account of the conversion of Zacchaeus is the declaration by the little taxman that he will pay back anyone he's defrauded fourfold. By law, he would only have been obliged to repay the amount he had illegally taken, plus a fifth of that amount. Zacchaeus goes way beyond that. As a biblical scholar comments, it's an example of the good use of riches according to Luke. Zacchaeus achieves what the rich young man was unable to do. To the generous gesture of Zacchaeus, Jesus declares that salvation has come to his house, for this is what it means to be a son of Abraham. Other versions have simply, "for this man too is a son of Abraham." Tax collectors were considered by the Jews to be on a level with pagans, and so excluded from the chosen people, the seed of Abraham, and hence from salvation. But Jesus turns this idea on its head, and to make it quite clear, adds that this is what his mission is, to search out and save what was lost. Writes Bargellini,
"From now on, men would no longer be judged according to their race, condition, or profession, but according to their generosity, which had been great in the heart of Zacchaeus, the little one. By his gesture of renunciation and charity, he had ensured his salvation."
And let's close now with the final verses of Zacchaeus in the Leaves, beginning with the image of the tree itself, commenting on its unique experience.
Leaves of the sycamore, lifted on wind, give tongue. I have supported one in my own right who watched the procession, his eyes full of light. I can fade now, my thought heard or unheard. Did he not leave my bow and said no word? Slow the procession was coming. The drinkers remained sitting cross-legged. Only the man in the tree looked on the road and saw where light was ordained. Among those talking, the drinkers of wine, the shuffling of feet, the running of time, the gust of wind-blown leaves, the point of predestined will, stop. The great branches are moving. Now they are still.